Chapter 5. Shaken into existence by the shake and the bang of the great street door, reverberating through the solitary house. So, little Miss Kimmeens looked under the five empty beds of the five departed pupils, and looked under her own bed, and looked under Miss Pupford's bed, and looked under Miss Pupford's assistant's bed. And when she had done this, and was making the tour of the cupboards, the disagreeable thought came into her young head, what a very alarming thing it would be, to find somebody with a mask on, like Guy Fawkes, hiding bolt upright in a corner, and pretending not to be alive. However, Miss Kimmeens, having finished her inspection without making any such uncomfortable discovery, sat down in her tidy little manner to needlework, and began stitching away at a great rate. The silence all about her soon grew very oppressive, and the more so, because of the odd inconsistency, that the more silent it was, the more noises there were. The noise of her own needle and thread as she stitched, was infinitely louder in her ears than the stitching of all the six pupils, and of Miss Pupford, and of Miss Pupford's assistant, all stitching away at once on a highly emulative afternoon. Then, the schoolroom clock conducted itself in a way in which it had never conducted itself before, fell lame, somehow, and yet persisted in running on as hard, and as loud as it could. The consequence of which behavior was, that it staggered among the minutes in a state of the greatest confusion, and knocked them about in all directions without appearing to get on with its regular work. Perhaps this alarmed the stairs, but be that as it might, they began to creak in a most unusual manner, and then the furniture began to crack, and then poor little Miss Kimmeens, not liking the furtive aspect of things in general, began to sing as she stitched. But, it was not her own voice that she heard, it was somebody else making believe to be Kitty, and singing excessively flat, without any heart, so as that would never mend matters, she left off again. By and by the stitching became so palpable a failure that Miss Kitty Kimmeens folded her work neatly and put it away in its box and gave it up. Then the question arose about reading. But no, the book that was so delightful, when there was somebody she loved for her eyes to fall on when they rose from the page, had not more heart in it than her own singing now. The book went to its shelf as the needlework had gone to its box, and, since something must be done, thought the child, I'll go put my room to rights. She shared a room with her dearest little friend among the other five pupils, and why then should she now conceive a lurking dread of the little friend's bedstead? But she did. There was a stealthy air about its innocent white curtains, and there were even dark hints of a dead girl lying under the coverlet. The great want of human company, the great need of a human face, began now to express itself in the facility with which the furniture put on strange exaggerated resemblances to human looks. A chair with a menacing frown was horribly out of temper in a corner. A most vicious chest of drawers snarled at her from between the windows. It was no relief to escape from those monsters to the looking glass, for the reflection said, "What? Is that you all alone there? How you stare!" And the background was all a great void stare as well. The day dragged on, dragging Kitty with it very slowly by the hair of her head, until it was time to eat. There were good provisions in the pantry, but their right flavor and relish had evaporated with the five pupils, and Miss Pupford, and Miss Pupford's assistant, and the cook and housemaid. Where was the use of laying the cloth symmetrically for one small guest, who had gone on ever since the morning growing smaller and smaller, while the empty house had gone on swelling larger and larger? The very grace came out wrong, for who were we who were going to receive and be thankful? So, Miss Kimmeens was not thankful, and found herself taking her dinner in very slovenly style, gobbling it up, in short, rather after the manner of the lower animals, not to particularize the pigs. But, this was by no means the worst of the change wrought out in the naturally loving and cheery little creature as the solitary day wore on. She began to brood and be suspicious. She discovered that she was full of wrongs and injuries. All the people she knew got tainted by her lonely thoughts and turned bad. It was all very well for Papa, a widower in India, to send her home to be educated, and to pay a handsome round sum every year for her to Miss Pupford, and to write charming letters to his darling little daughter. But what did he care for her being left by herself, when he was, as no doubt he always was, enjoying himself in company from morning till night? Perhaps he only sent her here, after all, to get her out of the way. It looked like it today, that is, for she had never dreamed of such a thing before. And this old pupil who was being married. It was insupportably conceited, and selfish in the old pupil to be married. She was very vain, and very glad to show off, but it was highly probable that she wasn't pretty, and even if she were pretty, which Miss Kimmeens now totally denied, she had no business to be married, and, even if marriage were conceded, she had no business to ask Miss Pupford to her wedding. As to Miss Pupford, she was too old to go to any wedding. She ought to know that. She had much better attend to her business. She had thought she looked nice in the morning, but she didn't look nice. She was a stupid old thing. She was another stupid old thing. Miss Pupford's assistant was another. They were all stupid old things together. More than that, it began to be obvious that this was a plot. They had said to one another, "Never mind Kitty, you get off, and I'll get off, and we'll leave Kitty to look after herself. Who cares for her?" To be sure they were right in that question, for who did care for her, a poor little lonely thing against whom they all planned and plotted? Nobody, nobody. Here Kitty sobbed. At all other times she was the pet of the whole house, and loved her five companions in return with a child's tenderest and most ingenuous attachment. But now, the five companions put on ugly colors, and appeared for the first time under a sullen cloud. There they were, all at their homes that day, being made much of, being taken out, being spoilt and made disagreeable, and caring nothing for her. It was like their artful selfishness always, to tell her when they came back, under pretense of confidence and friendship, all those details about where they had been, and what they had done and seen, and how often they had said, "Oh, if we had only darling little Kitty here." Here indeed. I dare say, when they came back after the holidays, they were used to being received by Kitty, and to saying that coming to Kitty was like coming to another home. Very well then, why did they go away? If they meant it, why did they go away? Let them answer that. But they didn't mean it, and couldn't answer that, and they didn't tell the truth, and people who didn't tell the truth were hateful. When they came back next time, they should be received in a new manner, they should be avoided and shunned. And there, the while she sat all alone revolving how ill she was used, and how much better she was than the people who were not alone, the wedding breakfast was going on. No question of it. With a nasty great bride cake, and with those ridiculous orange flowers, and with that conceited bride, and that hideous bridegroom, and those heartless bridesmaids, and Miss Pupford stuck up at the table. They thought they were enjoying themselves. But it would come home to them one day to have thought so. They would all be dead in a few years, let them enjoy themselves ever so much. It was a religious comfort to know that. It was such a comfort to know it, that little Miss Kitty Kimmeens suddenly sprang from the chair in which she had been musing in a corner, and cried out, "Oh, those envious thoughts are not mine. Oh, this wicked creature isn't me. Help me, somebody. I go wrong, alone by my weak self. Help me, anybody." "Miss Kimmeens is not a professed philosopher, sir," said Mr. Traveller, presenting her at the barred window, and smoothing her shining hair, "but I apprehend there was some tincture of philosophy in her words, and in the prompt action with which she followed them. That action was, to emerge from her unnatural solitude, and look abroad for wholesome sympathy, to bestow and to receive. Her footsteps strayed to this gate, bringing her here by chance, as an apposite contrast to you. The child came out, sir. If you have the wisdom, to learn from a child, but I doubt it, for that requires more wisdom than one in your condition would seem to possess. You cannot do better than imitate the child, and come out too from that very demoralizing touch of yours. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.